Hello, Jeha. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in. Here is episode number 2 with Heather Cutter. I shared an earlier podcast episode recorded in 2020 a few weeks ago, so click back to listen to that one to get a little bit of a background on Heather. This episode is around where Heather is right now, and we are going to be continuing to have these kōrero about rumirumi, Māori rongoā, healing medicines, healing energies. There is something slightly off and odd with the audio, with the lispy sound on some of the words. It came that way from the recording. I don't know what happened. I hope you enjoy this one. We've got another one recorded and a few more in the plans. For those who may feel the pull, you've got a few more days to join us next weekend in our Rumirumi Wānanga on the 7th and 8th of March. I'm often a later bird. I like waiting until when everything feels really solid in my body to know what's right for me. So if you're like that and you are all go to join us for the weekend, please feel free to reach out on Tauranga Wellness on Instagram or gabrielle@tauranga.com.au. I look forward to hearing from you. Hi everyone, I'm here today with Heather Cutter, who is one of my kaiako, and she works with Te Whare Whako Ora. And I've known her for a while. I don't even know, because as you know, me and time are a weird thing. She also supports in Awhi's Tauira in Aotearoa that weave with her mahi. So I thought it would be a beautiful opportunity to talk about rongo Māori, miri romiromi, and yeah, your journey, sis. The question I normally start with is, what's sitting on your heart today?
What's sitting in my heart today is, I've been doing a bit of work in one of the women's prisons for the last couple of years. I was asked to come and be a support person in the 9-month program that we run, that's being run, and we're delivering the rongo component. And one of them had a parole hearing today, and we went in thinking it wasn't going to go very well and all of that. And it really felt to me like the work that she got through the process of being offered rongo in a continuous way for 9 months time helped get her into a position and helped change her vibration to a point where she got a really exciting positive result, and she's going to be released in time for Christmas. And so that's really top of my mind today. And so just feeling the power of the mahi and what it can do to help create shifts for our whānau.
Oh, I love that. That's such a beautiful heart feeling to share out. I wonder if you want to say where you whakapapatu or anything like that. Whatever's sitting in your space.
Ki te tau toku whaia he uri ki Ngāti Kahu ki Whangaroa, ko Taratara te Maunga, ko Mangawhero te Awa, ko Whangaroa te Moana, ko te Maumahara te Marae, ko te Whare Nui, ko te Aroha te Marae, ko he rau tuku ingoa.
Whakamoeme te kia koe ho. I love that I can picture Taratara with his little hat.
yeah, I love that. That's what I love about our practice is when we do recite our pepeha like that, what we're doing is we are going to those places of aid. And I could see that in your eyes, that you instantly went there. I was like, oh yeah, she just went there with me. Because of course you've been there. So it resonates for you. So you're imbued with the energy of that place, the vibration of that place. And I love that. And that's what it's all about, eh? So ki te tau tōku papa, Irish, English, Danish. I'm born and raised in Te Tirangi in West Auckland by the beach in the bush. And now I live in Whangarei, and I mahi between Whangarei. I go between Tāmaki and Te Tai Tukurau. I do Whangarei, but I also do up the Kaiō because I can't help myself. I'm always looking for reasons to be there. I practice our traditional practices, our Indigenous practices of well-being. I live and practice those practices and share those practices in many different ways with as many whānau as I can, as what's humanly possible.
How would you describe your mahi and what you do?
It's always an interesting thing when people ask me, what do you do? If they're coming from a place of not knowing at all,
I find it hard to express it in words. I'm a Rumi Rumi practitioner. There's so much embedded within that. There's so much wānanga that unfolds within that. People think of Rumi Rumi as being a form of bodywork, and I guess it is when you speak of it like that, but I find that the way we work with whānau, a lot of different layers that get woven in to make that experience complete. So I've been doing mahi, like I said, in the women's prison the last couple of years, which has been really interesting. As a different space, there's a bit of conflict around whether you do or don't go into those spaces for mahi. So I have an organisation called Te Whare Whaka Ora, and with Te Whare Whaka Ora, what I do is one-on-one practice with people, and then I also train other new practitioners to come through. And then I also run a couple of contracts to deliver wānanga to other whānau in our community, and I do that from Tāmaki Makaurau up to Te Tai Tukurau, and yeah, that all keeps me very, very busy.
What I'm hearing is that in any mahi we do, there's always so much more than the bodywork component. How would you describe Rumi Rumi today? Because I feel like it changes from moment to moment in different eras of sharing.
How I would describe it is that what we are doing is we're looking to shift vibration, and we're looking to change the cellular memory contained within the human. That's why it's holistic, because it's the holistic being. It's changing the vibrational pattern that's being held within the being that is imprinted as we go through life. So our mahi then is to shift that and change it. So sometimes that might be whiti-whiti kōrero or karaki or takutaki or waiata or tangapōro or haumata pressure points, or it can go right up and down through those different layers, eh?
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a nice one for today.
Yeah.
People always ask me, like, once I start stepping into the mahi, they're like, oh, how do I describe it? And I'm like, whatever comes out your mouth on that day.
I love it. Yeah, beautiful, 100%.
With your journey into this mahi, how did that look?
The thing that drew me to this mahi was actually my own well-being. And I always laugh because I never came with any intention to practice myself at all. In fact, I was a very reluctant I tend to be very reluctant about everything I end up doing. I come dragging my feet the whole way, and then I give up eventually and give up all resistance and just accept the future. But yeah, it was through my own well-being was what led me to this path. And once I had gotten to a certain point, I was very unwell at the time, physically. And once I got to a place of wellness within myself again, I thought, well, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I'll carry on with my life. And the tūpuna basically just sort of roadblocked me and redirected me and refused to let me go and do whatever it was I thought I was heading off to do, have kept me really busy ever since. And the way I look at it is that they're asking me to give back for what I've received. And I'm really happy to do that, because I feel like I've received a lot, and not just for me, but for my uri, for my tamariki, for my mum, you know, up and down the whakapapa. I feel like we've all benefited and been given back so graciously that I'm happy to give whatever is asked.
I love that. And how did that look at the beginning of the journey? Did it feel like a blessing? Did it feel more like a messing?
Interestingly, once I stopped being reluctant and jumped into wānanga, it didn't take long before I quit everything. I quit my job. I quit my other studies. I quit everything. Some would say I even quit parenting to just focus all my attention and energy on wānanga. I just became very focused. And it wasn't with any goal in mind. There was no place I thought I was heading to with it. It was just that's where my heart was being called to be. And so I responded to that. Because for me, it was always about finding the path of heart, finding the pathway of the manawa and where that leads and how that unfolds. Because that then is the authentic truth, right? There's no mind coming into cloud that or distract that. And for me, it felt like when I found wānanga, oh, wow, my heart is called to the. So I had no choice but to listen and continue to listen. The very first wānanga I ever went to was one on the Whatu Manawa, which was a heck of an introduction, because it was like way out of space. Like, oh my gosh, it was everything I'd ever been looking for and didn't even realize it. And it spoke to me so loudly that I couldn't ignore it. And so I became immersed in wānanga and in everything to do with wānanga and in helping. Sometimes I could feel people would sometimes sort of look at me sideways, and other people would say to me, well, you're giving up a lot to be here, and you're actually giving a lot by being here. It's an interesting one, because now that I'm in the other side of the experience, I see it's actually quite rare for people to give that much of themselves to the wānanga. It's quite a big, and I didn't appreciate it at the time, but yeah, I just did what I was told, basically.
Can you say more on that, the giving of self to the wānanga?
Well, I feel like everything I do is in service to the wānanga. And it has been, when I look at the bigger picture of the whole thing, I feel like even the path that led me towards Wānanga, which was my health, was already the Wānanga. And interestingly, I was a single parent raising my children by myself, and I felt like I had leant right into my tāne energy as a way of coping and being in the world, as is the case with so many of us wahine. And that involved me bringing an energy of kind of fighting, for wellness, fighting for this, fighting for everything. And not in a conscious way, not really realizing that what I was bringing was that if I'm bringing fighting energy, I'm only going to find more fight. So in that process, I had to completely surrender and let go of anything I felt I needed to fight for and actually just allow it to flow and just let go of attachment and completely surrender, let go of attachment outcomes, let go of expectation, and just allow whatever was going to unfold and be okay with it. And I feel like that's what it asked of me. And when I did that, it helped me to be well. And then I continue to do that. And it's not always easy sometimes, because I might have ideas about the way I might like things to unfold. And I have to just park that up and go, okay, all right. And then the balance of that and the understanding or knowledge that we are creating our reality. And so our beliefs, our mindsets, our thoughts, our whakaaro, all of that is part of creating our reality. And at the same time, allowing our reality to unfold. And realizing that there is no right or wrong. There is no broken or fixed. There is simply the universe unfolding. And if nothing's broken, then nothing needs fixing. It just needs to remember the truth of itself. And that's what I feel like it all is. And I feel like it's still that. I'm still learning that. I can say it. I'm still learning to live that, right? It's the ongoing process. And it's an unfolding.
It's beautiful. This might seem like a bit of a side bend, but I'm curious because of my own journey at the moment. So you went from being a single mum when you started the WA, and are you still single now?
No, well, see, that's the funny thing is what I find is that when we give wholeheartedly to the Wānanga and serve our tupuna the way that they ask us to, they give back very generously to us. So I've been in a relationship now for about, we have much debate about this, I think it's 7 or 8 years, somewhere there. We live now on 10 acres on the outskirts of Whangarei. It's kind of ridiculous. I've got a big food forest and sheep and 2 dogs. And I'm having a big workspace constructed at the moment as we speak. And it's absolutely phenomenal. When I first came into the Wānanga, I could barely feed myself and my children. And it was very intense times.
How have you navigated that with like walking alongside another person who may or may not be in the Wānanga?
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting part. Because people often say, how did you two meet? Because we seem such an unlikely combination. And the funny thing is he came into the Wānanga. And so that's what I mean. I feel like the Wānanga takes really good care of us. If we give to the Wānanga gives back to us in many, many ways. And because he came into the Wānanga, he was really unwell himself. He was really broken physically. And he had one session with my kaiako and couldn't believe it. It changed his life. And so then he started coming and attending Wānanga. And through that, we got to know each other. Later on, we found out that actually his grandmother knew my grandmother from a long, long time ago when they were both like in their 19, 20 kind of age. And so although he came into Wānanga and that's where we met, he doesn't actively involve himself in this life. And he has a whole other world going on that he's a part of, as well as being a part of my world. And that can be tricky. It can be tricky, probably more for him than for me. Because the Wānanga asks so much of me that I'm very unavailable. But fortunately, actually, he's a workaholic, so it's fine.
Sounds like my partner.
And he can see what it's done for me and what it's done for him. And he really fully supports everything to do with the Wānanga. And he can make sense of the concept. You know, if I come home from a day of mahi and I'm a bit fried, for want of a better word, like if I'm just a bit burnt out from the day, he can make sense of that, which is really helpful because sometimes I can't share a lot about it and I just need someone to just hold that space for me while I decompress and come back down to be a human being again.
Back to your tangata.
Yes. I'd say for my children, it's a mixed bag for them too, though, because they were used to having me all to themselves and now they have to share me a lot more than they ever used to with my mahi. I'm quite unavailable even to them. I actually call on them for support as well now because they're a young adult. They can also see the benefit for them as well as me and the wider whānau.
Yeah, how did that Can you say a little bit more on that? Because I know there's a lot of mamas going through different wananga and grappling with that for themselves and for their family.
Yeah, that is a tricky one, I find, because we do feel so conflicted as mothers. And I definitely was a mother that I gave my everything to my babies. They were my world and I made sure they were okay all of the time. And I was that kind of mama. And so it's that I take time to wānanga with them about their feelings and I give them permission to have their feelings and I make sure that there is time for them now. There wasn't a lot when I was training, to be honest. Most weekends I was in wānanga, like maybe at least 3 out of 4 weekends, probably more, I was in wānanga. And they, it's a good question. I guess what I did was I didn't try and ram it down their throats. I allow their path and their journey to be theirs and theirs alone. And I keep it away from them as much as possible, but give them every opportunity to step towards it. And if I had my way, they'd be fully in and be like wrapped up inside the thing with me. But I appreciate that it's their journey and it's not mine, or it's my journey and it's not theirs, however you want to look at it. And that our paths are entwined, but they also have their own lives to live. And they have their own time to come to it, because I can feel that both of them would be remarkable at this mahi, but it's not their time yet. They need to live their lives and gain some wisdom and some insights and have some experiences.
Yeah, that was me. I couldn't wait to get away from it. I couldn't see, when I was younger, I couldn't see any benefit to being a part of that. I was like, what? Like, you're so crazy. Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, I love this.
What it also allowed was for them to actually get a bit of space from me, because I think when we are single mamas, we can hold them quite tightly. And I think it actually allowed me to loosen my grip on them a little bit and let them have their wānanga, let them have their fall, let them hurt themselves, let that be okay, and just be over here. And when they need me, they'll call me. And they always would. And sometimes, at certain times, especially as they were, you know, what we can do is, so at times when they were going through those years as rangatahi, they felt that, you know, they can be quite tumultuous. So what I would do is I would actually protect them with takutaku from a distance. I would just always be wrapping them up in takutaku. And wherever they were, whatever they were doing, I would be sending a takutaku to encase them and hold them and keep them safe, calling on their tūpuna to be there with them, so that even if I wasn't physically with them, I was able to, you know, send some of that for them, for their well-being, and then be there to catch them when they fell. But give them the grace to come to me, you know, not go chasing them down.
I love that. I'm curious about that transition from being in wānanga, maybe as a space holder, but as a tauira, to stepping more into being a kaiko or a kaiarahi, how that transition felt for you.
Well, that's a funny one too, because when I look back, the whole thing is also obvious to me, but at the time I had absolutely no idea why I was doing what I was doing. In the end, I could see that I had been helping to hold the space and do all of that. My kaiko had had to push me quite a lot. He'd often had to push me off the cliff and he didn't have any qualms about it. I remember we were in Belgium one time at a festival and working, and we were heading over for him to give a kōrero to present on what Māori healing lifts and is about. And as we were walking towards the area, he said to me, oh, you'll be fine. You've got this. Oh, you've got to be joking, right? And, you know, no, 100%, you're going to be totally fine. And so he had done that a lot to me over the years, where he would just ask me to step up and I never would have done it otherwise. And the same thing was true of me stepping out from under him. I never would have done that either if the wānanga hadn't asked me to do it. And if the universe wasn't saying, this is the next step for you, this is what we now want you to do. And so it felt very natural, but I also find it a very humbling experience, because I'm very reluctant. If I could have my say, I'd wait another 30 years. You know, go, okay, now I'm ready. But that doesn't seem to be what I get to do. And so I accept that and I do what's asked of me. I think it's one of responsibility too. I take my responsibility very seriously, and I want to, if I'm going to help guide anybody else, I want to make sure I'm doing that. I'm giving my everything to that and doing it to the best of my abilities and ensuring their safety. I'm really big on safety. It's a really big, important thing for me that anyone coming in with me is safe, whether they're receiving, sharing the mātauranga or the practices.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to give your kaiko a shout out and name? Or
So it's an interesting one because I see a lot of people, and I know some people, I was talking to somebody about this last week, who they jump around from Wānanga to Wānanga, and we have some names for that.
What do you call them?
Then I'll keep to myself. I don't encourage it and I don't recommend it, and I didn't do it. So for myself, I came in under Ruoto Perez, and I sat then at the time Tracy Lee Te Pā, and then they went their own ways and I followed Ruoto, and I just sat with him for years and I didn't hear anybody else's practices or teachings or ways of making sense of things. And it was an unusual thing for me because I tended to always be someone that would flit around a lot in life. He once said to me, you know, you could just stay with one thing for a time and actually master it. You'll have a novel idea. Okay, I'll try it.
It was the opposite. I went by chance to a wānanga with Atarangi and Manu. But then it just didn't work with me being here over in Borlu and Perth. And then it was easier to connect with Wikatoria, so went under her. It's always like this energy. I wasn't hopping, like I don't feel the need to go to everything, but I definitely felt the need, like there was certain times where I was like, I need to go there or I need to be there. And it was quite a clear thing for me in that way.
Beautiful. Mm. Well, when I say that, I mean, if I look at the whole sum total now, at this point, I did do a little bit of wānanga with Atarangi. I did a little bit of wānanga with Donna Kerridge and Palmer Gow. So I ended up sort of filling it out a little bit like that. But he was definitely my main kaioko. And I now sit with people. I'm still sitting with people. I love learning and I never want to stop learning. And I think it would be impossible to ever know everything there is to know. I love to sit and teach this because it's beautiful. I love that experience. I love being a learner.
Same, being held. And then something when you were talking before that came through when I was in Rarotonga was like, the wānanga chooses you, but it's really beautiful when you actually choose the wānanga.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that feels correct, because it was like when the wānanga was choosing me, but I didn't want it to choose me. There was a lot of like friction and resistance to that process, even though it was like I had to follow. But then once I chose this life, I didn't even know what I'd call this life, but once I chose the wānanga life, it feels a lot more easeful and it is easier to receive the blessings and then to offer from a deeper well, like more resourced. Whereas before it was like sometimes that what was being asked of me would feel depleting because I hadn't fully embraced what I was being asked to do, even though I couldn't ignore what I was being asked to do.
Beautiful. If I look back, my life before I came into the wānanga was a long struggle. It had just been struggle for a long time. Everything was hard. Everything was difficult. And when I look now at some people, I can see that imprint in them and I can see how much it's shifted in me. It's not a struggle anymore. There's no struggle. There is no struggle. And if things are struggle, then I'm off path and I need to come back into flow.
Same.
Yeah.
And what would you say to those people if they were ready to listen now, people who have that imprint of that struggle or everything's hard?
Listen to our heart, with our heart knows. Listen, because basically there's something out of alignment in the vibration and there's struggle. Allow their heart to lead them because our heart knows and our heart is the compass, it is the navigator. We're taught in the Western construct model that the mind is the thing we need to listen to. It's inaccurate. The mind is a labyrinth that we can get lost in, but the heart is a navigational tool. And if we give ourselves permission to start stepping into the truth of who we are and not only accept it, but actually celebrate it and realize that we are remarkable and unique and there is only one of us and that time is short. So we have to get out of our own way and allow our potential to begin to come through. The wānanga can really help with that, but you must do the mahi. And so the thing about what you're talking about is different, but I mean, those people that go wānanga, like every weekend they're at a different wānanga that's being held by somebody different. And they've got books and books of mātauranga, but it's not being applied. But it's the application of the mātauranga is where the key is.
Yeah. It's almost like it's sitting outside without being in.
Yeah. Get imbued, absorbed. But it's cool. It's cool because for me, it's all about honesty. It doesn't really matter what our truth is as long as we own it. Right. It's like, okay, well, that's cool. As long as you can see what you're up to and you're calling yourself on it, by all means, carry on. It's a fix that makes you happy. But I find they eventually do get it. And they eventually do see, you know, that this is not the path that's going to lead to it's constantly looking for something outside of oneself when actually we already have everything we need within us. And it's about remembering that. And we only can remember that if we stop and be still long enough to hear it.
It's very clear that everyone has their own truth, and that includes even how they weave with the mahi. So even if they're like learning with me and something else is true to them, I want them to uphold that. But then there's other things where I'm like, no.
There's personal truth and there's universal truth. They're two different things. So the fact that the universe is unfolding and that we are all part of the universe, that's a universal truth. That's not a personal truth. Whereas my personal truth might be that my personal truth is we're better to sit with one teacher primarily and then have other teachers come in around that. That to me is the truth for me that sits well with me, but it's not a universal truth. It's just how I feel about it.
And then do you want to speak on that protection and what that entails, both in Wananga and outside?
Yeah, beautiful. Because it's all about choices. It's one thing when we're doing the mahi to put our protection in place, but actually we need to do it all of the time. And that's what I'm always saying to people. It's like putting on your clothes. You don't forget to do that, luckily. So it's the same thing. It's about also ensuring that every day when we get up, we are putting things in place for spiritual protection and well-being and safety so that we can actually relax inside of that. And we're not having to constantly putting a lot of energy into maintaining walls. I find that a lot of us, when we're young, when we're encountering difficulties in life, we start constructing walls and we can make whole cities. And we have to reach a point. And this is an interesting one, like with the wahine I've been working with in the prison, how do they learn to drop those walls and still maintain their safety and their well-being in that space, in that environment, right? It's through those practices. It's through putting some spiritual protection out there in place and trusting that can hold way stronger and way better than anything we could ever create ourselves anyway. But we have to enact it. We have to put it in place. We have to take those steps to action it. And not just for our own well-being, but for the well-being of everybody connected to us and attached to us. We have to take those opportunities and do those things as well to be in nature, to maintain our connection to ourselves and to the taiao and to the atua and to our whānau, to maintain our safety and our well-being. In the mahi, it's about using our karakia, our takutaku, our waiata, our waitai, but also it's about learning. And that's where the wānanga comes in, is that the wānanga is teaching us how to maintain neutrality so that when we mahi, we can do it then. And so then the challenges that life brings us are often bringing us those to help us learn how to maintain neutrality. I have a story that I often share about a tāne once, and I parked outside the dairy and I went into the shop and he came in and he said, "Is that your car parked out there?" And I said, "Yeah." And he launched at me, started yelling at me. And I stood there and I stood there. And when he finished, I did him high five and I put my hand up like that. And he sort of took a step back and I said, no, high five, bro. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, congratulations on trying to share your misery with me, but I'm not buying today. I'm sorry. And just walked out. But the wānanga was bringing me an offering to see if I could maintain my neutrality or if I would take what was being offered to me. And the wānanga often does that for us. Eh? To me, that's about safety. Can I maintain myself in whatever I find myself, whatever situation? And without having seen, I might not see it coming. It might come out of left field. And that's where the warrior training comes in. And it's about being a heart strong warrior from my point of view, which requires a combination of compassion and ruthlessness. Ruthless compassion and compassionate ruthlessness towards ourselves and the world.
I was like that. It was actually in the wānanga where we met, where the concepts landed for me of like, to be a healer, you have to be able to be a warrior. You have to know war. And I was like, that makes so much sense, because it's not that you're like fighting things, but you are dealing with things that could cause war.
And it's calling on the atua of those realms, eh? Sometimes that's the energy that is required, but like you say, not with a fighting energy, not with a fighting intent. Yeah.
Yeah, has a very different outcome. The neutrality thing's such a interesting thing to weave with and learn, but also to see your, well, for me at least, to see my own vibration change the more that I do embody it, and then always learn there's more, like there's more spaces where I haven't embodied that or where that can land on a deeper level.
And just to see them as a whittle to, okay, you slipped it out of neutrality there. Okay, try that one again. We're going to try that one again in a week's time. You ready? Catch this ball. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think the mahi's ever done. I don't think it's ever finished. It's an ongoing unfolding of
making sense of the universe and ourselves and our place in it.
Yeah, I almost see Rumi Rumi like an atua in and of itself that's guiding me and has its own teachings. It is Wananga, but it's a different energetic that's like, okay, go, look at this, ponder this, voice this, step up here, step back there. You actually need to be angry in this moment. No, in this moment, it's actually correct to cry to release. There's no like, oh, you can't cry. Yeah, there's no rule.
That's right.
It's a freedom in the process.
Yes, that's right. There's nothing wrong with anger. There's nothing wrong with emotion. We're taught to bottle stuff up and push it down and not give it expression. Actually, it's fine to give things expression and then let it go. It's the holding on to things that's the problem.
Totally. So what's alive with you now in terms of your mahi? What's the piece that's emerging that's on the edge?
At the moment we've been, so one of the ways that I trained was in community clinic, and it was interesting because, like I said, Ruto would often push me or all of us under the bus or off the cliff, so to speak, or into the deep end. And no kaiako is perfect, but they will always give you what you need. That's the feeling I have about it. I can see now that when he did that, if he was serving us better than if he carried the can for us, actually, and especially somebody like me, because if you ask me, I'll say no thanks. But if you push me, I have no choice. And so I trained in community clinics, where the beautiful thing with community clinics is you get the chance to work on whānau and establish and build up your confidence in the mahi and experience in the mahi. And also whānau and the community have a chance to come and receive in a way that's really easy and straightforward for them. It doesn't take a lot of paperwork or pūtea or anything like that. So it's a win-win. What I've been doing, we run a big community clinic in Tāmaki with Turiki Healthcare. And then in this last year, I've started another one in Kaiō with Te Runanga o Whangaroa. Those, to me, are really a beautiful offering that I love to give back to the people, those learning, and also the communities, as the way to bring it back into our communities. Good for a lot of our whānau, they've never experienced it, or they have, but not for a long time, or there's fear, or there's, you know, a lot of barriers to them receiving. And so to me, I love those as a way to bring it back to our whānau. But also I feel like I want to do more mahi with whānau that have been incarcerated and that side of things. I'm flat out with ATC and EAP type mahi. Like, this is, it's just kind of reaching ridiculous proportions where there's absolutely no way for me to keep up with the demand at the moment, which is why I seek to share the teachings and bring other practitioners, train other people up to step up and make sure they are as skilled as I can help them become, because there's so much fun I want to receive. I'm not very good at saying no, so the best option for me then is bring some other people and help me carry this. I really feel like, and I've been holding off on it because I can feel like if I action it, it's going to move really fast, and I haven't got capacity at the moment, but is to do some more work with helping our whānau rehabilitate out of those incarceration, out of prison systems, and out of those ways of that level of dysfunction and trauma that they're living within.
You mentioned that there's some natural barriers to people receiving. Can you say more on that?
Well, you know, there's still some preconceived ideas out there about our mahi and about hangovers from the time of the Tonga Suppression Act and things like that, that really did a number on our own people more than anything, about making our own practices difficult for us to access. And for a lot of our whānau, they became quite conflicted about it and feeling that a lack of trust, because that was that whole story behind that, right, was part of it was that they were pretty much, people were behaving like witch doctors kind of, and setting themselves up and making all sorts of claims, but actually they're casting spells on you and things like that. And so created a lot of fear in a lot of whānau, and helping people move beyond that and move through it and step towards receiving, I find is really something I love to do. And also financial barriers, and even you know, like it, traditionally in the past it would be, you might want to receive, but you wouldn't know any practitioners. You couldn't find one unless you knew one. And unless you knew someone that knew someone, it was so underground. So to me, what I love is that it's bringing it up into the open and shining the light on our practices. And I feel like at this time where we are in the world, this is the most amazing time to get to do that. because it's the perfect antidote to what's going on out there. And so what we need is more Indigenous practices of wellness. That's the answer. And we have the answers sitting within these practices. So the more people we can share them with and the more people we can expose to that and have them realize that, the better. I was talking to somebody the other day and she said, oh, I heard this other person said they really got a lot from their mahi with you, from working with you. And I said, yeah, they did. And she said, oh, that's great. But she was perplexed. She can't understand it because she can't get her head around what it is even that we're doing. And I think that can often be a barrier for people making sense of this kind of work and what it is.
Yeah, I often say, like, even if you look from the outside and it looks chaotic or there's like cries or screams, inside that person is experiencing a peacefulness.
Totally.
Then the after feeling of that release, it can be really, where you're sitting in that experience, if you're just observing, can be really different than the actual experience of the whai order or how they're feeling.
Totally. But again, it comes back to perspective, right? Because we've had that happen in a community clinic setting up in the far north one time, and suddenly someone came in that got on the table. It was a very high level case that we were working with all of a sudden. And so there's a lot of sort of, screaming or crying or wailing or fighting going on from the person on the table receiving. So we worked to get as many people in, out of the space as possible without them realizing why we were moving them out of the space. But a couple of them had caught on to what was going on and were really intrigued by it. And it was really interesting to see they saw what was happening and that they could see through it. It's to do with the fact that we've been colonized in our minds and in our thinking, that we perceive somebody's in pain, somebody's crying out, therefore there's a problem. Not necessarily. Actually, they could be receiving the best medicine they've ever received in their life. And it's all a way that we make sense of things though, right? Yeah. So it's about decolonizing our thinking and our way of making sense. And we've had it. I had it once where I was working on a wahine and we were in a setting that was quite remote with the bush around us. And she was, I was thinking about it just this morning and she was crying out. You would have sound, if you heard it, you probably would have thought I was stabbing her with a knife or something. That's how she sounded. So somebody came running through the bush to check that the person was okay. And on the one hand, I was really relieved to hear that, to see that someone would come running. If we're lying there screaming like that, someone does come running. Great. That's good to hear. But on the other hand, I was like trying to reassure her. Actually, she's totally fine. I'm not actually even hurting her. That's the sound that's coming out of her because that's what's been stored inside of her. That's the expression of her mamai or her pain. And it's that. So the physical pain must meet that. There must be a meeting of that, right? So which requires some force. It can sometimes look like we're a bit indifferent if you don't understand what we're up to. It's neutrality in practice to hold the space and keep working with someone when they are going through that kind of expression.
Yeah. And then also sometimes you can be touching as light as a feather and there's the same response as your actual layer of touch is very small and that's having the same response.
Yes.
When I get the opportunity to demonstrate that, I like it because people are like, but it really lands then of like, this is not a physical, like even though there's this perception it's a physical, it's actually not physical at all. It's just the energy meeting the energy. And sometimes that does move through a physical depth and sometimes it's more just a spiritual depth that can have a sound.
Yes, yes, 100%. And it's about no attachment to that too, right? And then it's also about no attachment to, can I help this person? Can I serve this person in this moment too, right? Well, I can hold the space. And beyond that, it's not up to me.
My favorite saying is, oh, let's see what we can do.
Beautiful.
That helps me drop in a bit, but then I'll be like, let's see what we can do.
Yeah, beautiful. Because it depends what they're ready to shift, eh? And we're not in charge of that. We're not in control of that. And I think that's one of them.
I remember one that I had gone to and I didn't have a release at the WAR, but I was driving home. And I had to pull over on the side of the road because the cry coming out of me was so intense, I didn't feel safe to drive. And that was like afterwards. And that was a good lesson for me to realize that we don't always know what the outcome is or what has happened. So even though we didn't see a reaction in a session, that doesn't mean something hasn't happened. I don't know if you've had the same, but I can run into people 2 years later and they're like, oh my God, and tell me. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like I didn't realize what happened.
Yeah. Didn't register the level of impact. It's so impactful, this mahi, and it changes the way that we are in the world. I can't even begin to express how much it changes us and how much that
what a difference that makes for the unfolding of our lives and those that are connected to us. Remarkable. Yeah. The potential is huge because it's our potential, right? So it's stepping into our potential, which is unlimited.
I interrupted you before. Do you remember what you were about to say?
Oh, I know what it was. It was that when we realize that we're not in control, there's a freedom in that. And in that freedom, we can find ourselves and allow our lives to actually begin to unfold. But we tend to be holding on so tightly with ideas and right or wrong that the thing can't even begin. That's where a lot of struggle comes from.
Can you see a difference in energy? How does it appear to you in energy field where someone's operating from that or not? Because you can see it, but how do you see it? Or is it a knowing?
Yeah, it's a knowing. And it's if there's any struggle in them and in the way their life is unfolding, then that tells me they're struggling to actually let go of control. It can manifest itself in many different ways, how it looks. Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to sit with that, Pātai. But it's an interesting one, you know, because these days we're taught to use the law of attraction to help change things. There's such a misunderstanding there, and it's so frustrating because if you give people the tools and they apply them, things change and shift. If you give them part of the concept and don't give them the key, nothing changes. Then they feel like the thing doesn't work, and that it's not that the thing doesn't work, it's the application.
Or it works. I've heard stories of people getting things that they asked for and it's like a shit show. Like one of my friends, she was telling me this story. She's like, I'm actually really scared of manifestation because she's gotten everything she's asked for, but it's like it turned out horrible.
Well, because half the time we're really unconscious about what we're asking for, eh? We're not paying attention to what we're asking for. And generally, we always get what we're asking for. We ask for everything we're receiving. We just didn't realize we were asking for it. And that's half the problem, right? So it's all about increasing our conscious awareness of what we're up to. What are we doing? What are we thinking? What are we creating? We're creating this. Do we like it? That's a really tough one. You know, I used to have a wahine I was working with, and she'd been living in a car for a few years. And I'd say to her, well, you're creating this reality. So the only person that can actually change it is you, which she found very confronting to deal with and to hear. And people would argue the point with me and say that that's not true. It is always the case. We are creating this reality is born out of, we are bringing this into this reality. It's born from us, you know, and I love in the beautiful land of Moimoia where you are, that whakaaro around the fact that everything came out of Papa. And if you think about it, everything did come out of Papa, like every single thing. My phone is Papa. My book is Papa. My table is Papa. I am Papa. And then when you approach life like that, it's got such a different feeling to it.
It definitely changes. It's almost like there's a rigidness, though, like using that example of someone who's experiencing a lot of challenge. The mind is just here, whereas actually there's all this possibility. So it's limited, and then it's just trying to find out where those keys can open to see further.
So that's why perspective is everything, right? And like our tupuna, one of the things that, like, that always comes up for me is our tupuna had no difficulty coming to terms with the concept that there's multiple truths. The truth is like a diamond, and it depends where you're standing, what it looks like to you, because it's multifaceted. And we can agree on that. We can agree that the truth looks different depending on where you're standing. So then anything is possible, because it depends where you're standing, what looks possible and what's not possible. It doesn't depend on who you are. It depends on where you're standing, where you're facing the world, the way your outlook, what you see when you look outside of yourself.
Love that. And you don't have to answer the question, but would you be open to talking about deciding to get your kawe or the movement towards?
Oh, yeah, sure. That was a long one, Anga, that was. One time I went down to Nuiakiwa for a wānanga, and I came back, and while I was there, we were there with a tamoko artist, and he said to me, oh, I can see your kawai. And I was like, can you? I can't. I got home and my mum said to me, oh, I thought you'd come back with your kawai. I was like, did you? Ah, okay, interesting. And so then after that, it started sitting with me that it may be a journey, and the wānanga really began for me then. And it continued for a long time, and I sat with it really quietly for a really long time. And then a friend of mine contacted me and said, I've booked you in. Steve, you're... Oh. And I said,
Oh, okay. So then that really ramped things up for me. I had to make a call whether I would receive that, accept that in that time or not. It was a heck of a wānanga because I feel like we put a lot on ourselves about what it means to wear our tūpuna on our faith, because essentially that's what it is, eh, really. And it's something I spent a long years and years sitting with and coming to a place of feeling that I was worthy to receive and that it's something that my tūpuna wanted. With all of these kind of journeys, I tend to go through them really quietly. It's a really personal thing that I don't tend to talk about while I'm going through it. And no one even knew except me. In the end, I decided that I needed to take charge of the situation. So I booked myself in with Muko, Muko Smith, and he uses the uhi. And that's why I wanted to receive from him, one of the reasons. And I love his energy, because whatever energy that the ta carries comes through from that person. They imbue you with a piece of them. It can't help but be any other way. So it was really, yeah, I loved his energy, and he does, and he works with the uhi, which I love. And so we did that, and we were all set, and it was going to be amazing. And that he, you know, he didn't want a lot of people there, and I said, okay. So he said about 6, so I organized about 12, and they were walking, and it kept growing, and I said, like, yeah, it's okay, it's fine, he'll cope, it'll be fine. And then on the day we had to postpone. He'd come down with COVID, and I was like, wow, what does this mean? It's a sign, it's a tēnu. And a tohu of what? What does it mean? And is it his tohu or is it my tohu? Who's the tohu for? Who's the speaking to? And what's it about? But it's impacting me, so therefore it's got something to say to me. So anyway, so I left it, and I was quite, it sent me spiraling back deep into my wānanga. But I'd realised that my partner was meant to be coming down from Whangarei to Tāmaki for the day, and he was bringing some items of mine, and he hadn't left in time. He wasn't actually going to get there in time. And so that's sort of the backstory. So then me and Mokko made another date to come together, and we didn't talk about what it was for. We just made another date to come together, and I went really casually to see him and arrived there, and we got talking, and we ended up talking, and somehow it came up, and we said, is that what we're actually doing here today? And he said, well, funnily enough, I have those tools with me here today. So if that is what we're doing, I have got everything. And I said, well, funnily enough, I brought all my taonga with me. So if that is what we're doing, I have everything I need. And he said, okay, well, if it was what we're doing today, who would you need to be here? And I said, well, my mum is 30 minutes away. Let me ring and see if she can get here in time. And I rang her, and she said, yeah, I'm getting in the car right now. And so she came with her twin sister, and my daughter was there, and my daughter's partner, and me, and that was it. And it was such a remarkable experience, and it was so unexpected for it to unfold on that day. And I love that, because my entire life has been unexpected. And it's about me being able to move really fast, change direction. Can you change direction that fast? Sure I can. I have no attachment to any outcome. It's great. Let's do it then. And it was really beautiful, and it was exactly as it needed to be. And it was a wānanga for everybody else, because nobody else saw it coming either. And they had a lot of difficulties with it for a lot of people. And a lot of people, yeah, were taken quite off guard by it. Because of course, I didn't tell anyone it was happening if they didn't know. And that night I went home and I went to sleep, and I had a dream that I'd received my moko kauai. And I woke up and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know if it was real or if it was a dream. I actually can't tell you. To the point where I actually had to get up and go and look in the mirror. And so I got up in the middle of the night, and I walked into the bathroom, and I stood and looked in the mirror, and oh my gosh, it's real. It's really real. It was just the most remarkable experience ever. And I loved that Mokko said to me, he said, like, just keep it quiet. So I did. So I didn't make any announcements. I didn't change my photo on media platforms or anything like that for at least 12 months. I just left it, and I just let myself and my tūpuna and my whānau have a wānanga slowly with it. And And then I shared it. And it's been a really interesting journey, because a lot of people, part of it for me was because I am so fear that I was I guess with a part of me that was concerned about the response I would get from the world. And that's a big wānanga for me, because I've always cared a lot about that. And so I had to let that go. And so what I see is that the wānanga just keeps on asking me to let stuff go. that doesn't serve me and let that go. And when I do, I receive so many blessings. And so, you know, the interesting thing is no one has ever said anything negative about it to me. No one's ever made a derogatory comment. I hear a lot of comments that get made to other people out there. Nothing has ever been directed except positivity. I walk up, the most unlikely people in the shop in Akaroa the other day. I love your milk roll. I was, wow, thank you. That's beautiful. That can be a thing too, right? How we receive that. I was visiting an uncle recently. He was very tentative to talk to me about it. And he said, I was on an aeroplane recently and a woman sat down next to me and she had a beautiful moko kawai. And he said, and I said to her, I love your moko. And she turned to him and she said, and you are who? And I thought, wow, that's interesting how ungracious of her, because I get her perspective and I understand what she's saying. But at the same time, my belief is that the truth of us is we are love. And when we're coming from anything other than that, then we're out of truth. So for me, it's been beautiful because I felt like my tūpuna were walking behind me. But when my kawai came through, it felt like my tūpuna were standing in front of me. They'd moved from behind me to in front of me. And so now when I walk, they walk in front of me. And yeah, it's a really safe feeling.
I loved hearing that. That's so cool. Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate that you had that 12 months to sit with a bird and have your own wānanga with it before sharing.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. It's been a beautiful journey.
So as we wind down, is there anything still in your heart to share?
For those that feel called to step towards their truth, whatever that is, to honour that, to honour themselves, and to let go of anything that's standing in the way of them being able to do that.
Thank you so much for your time today. I value so much for like getting to know you more and love the ways that our weaving take place. I'm very appreciated and honouring you and all you're doing.
Thank you. Appreciate you and all that you're doing as well. You do beautiful mahi. And I love the timelessness of our time together, because, you know, years can go by and it's just, I don't have anything going on with time.
Time's such a weird thing for me. You know, sometimes people ask me stories about my life and I'm like, hey, well, when that happened, that was happening. So it must have been about.
That's right. People often ask me, how long have you been doing this? Or how long have you been? And I'm not really a numbers person. I don't really know. I could work it out if I had to, but is it relevant? Does it mean anything to anyone really? It's just them trying to make sense of things and attaching numbers to the idea of that making sense. When my son was a toddler, he used to say to me, Mum, remember, time doesn't exist anyway.
Thank you. I'm very grateful for that.
Lovely to spend some time with you.
So just breathing into all that was shared, honouring our tūpuna, honouring all the words of kupu spoken. We hope that they reach those who need to hear this, to hear the vibration, and just pulling our energy back into ourselves so that we can go on with our day with the perfect amount of energy. Kwai o te kahanga o te aonga.
Beautiful. Lovely. Enjoy the rest of what your day brings.